Here's what we got to talk about on this episode of the Hockey Talk Show. We are jam-packed. Out of all the shows we've been doing lately, this is the most packed show. Jeff Skinner signs with the Buffalo Sabres. What does that mean for that team? How does that signing screw the Toronto Maple Leafs? We have to talk about Game 6. Obviously, tonight, Stanley will be in the house. What do the Bruins have to do to force a Game 7? Can the St. Louis Blues capture a cup tonight? Zdeno Chara, Jordan Binnington, Conn Smythe talk, referee missed calls talk. We'll get into all of Game 6 in the Stanley Cup Final in this episode. Plus, rumors, they are swirling. Corey Perry on his way out in Anaheim. We have to talk about the Edmonton Oilers, Milan Lucic, James Neal. We have a lot of free agency, restricted free agency, and trade rumor talk to go through. New York Rangers. We got some news about the Rangers and their draft pick. It's not groundbreaking, but it is worth mentioning for sure. We'll do, throw in a dash of the Minnesota Wild, and if we have time, which I think we will, we'll talk about the new ownership situation yet again with the Arizona Coyotes. You can't miss a second of this one. We got a whole nice, long hockey talk show on the morning of Game 6 in the Stanley Cup Final right here at HockeyTalkShow.com. All right, welcome in, everybody. If you're watching on the live stream, Facebook or YouTube, make sure you hit the thumbs up on this video right away as soon as you get in. That is always appreciated. Share it on your social media if you can, Twitter and Facebook. Throw it out to your hockey loving friends in the locker room, at your beer league, in your office, wherever. Sharing the show is always appreciated. Always helps our numbers jump up. And of course, if you're listening via podcast, you can throw that out on your social as well. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, make sure you hit that 5-star rate and review button. Helps us grow up the ladder there. There really isn't a lot of good hockey podcasts around. And there's definitely not that has live interaction for you. There is no hockey podcast where you can actually watch the show live and go back and forth. So make sure you let everybody know. If they're fans of the other big hockey podcasts, let them know what we're doing down here on the Hockey Talk Show. Lots to talk about. I want to get into Game 6. Lee's in the Facebook chat. Go Blues. Finish it tonight. I think the Blues actually have a good chance to finish it tonight. But I'll save that for when we get to it in the show. Let's tackle Jeff Skinner signing with the Buffalo Sabres. Obviously, this is pretty big news. This is the news of the weekend. They get the deal done. It is a $9 million cap hit. Even though it's an $8 million AAV on the contract, huge contract for Jeff Skinner. I often say, and we have been talking about this on the show an awful lot lately, which is, why would anybody sign a contract in June? If you're a free agent, it makes no sense whatsoever to sign your name on the dotted line when it comes to June. It's useless. July 1 is right there, free agency, you're out on the open market, people will be bidding for your services quite aggressively. You got to kind of count on that, right? That would make a lot of sense in most cases. Why doesn't that make sense in this case? Well, you're seeing one of the rare exceptions to my never sign a contract in June. Because if you get the sweetest possible deal you can get, if you don't think that it is going to be any better on the free agency market, and you're in a scenario where you are happy as hell, go on and sign that contract. Go ahead and make it happen, Captain. Because there's nothing, if you're not going to do any better, if this is the spot for you, then go and do it. Go and do it. Let's see here. 8-year deal. So max years, again, something that you can't get on the free market. If Skinner goes to the free market, he can only sign a 7-year deal. So he does sneak in that extra contract, right? $9 million. Is it a $9 million or $8 million? I think it looks like the Sabres announced $9 million, but I just saw an article that said $8 million. I'm trying to get some clarification on that. 40 goal scorer last year. Rasmus Dahlin, Jack Eichel, you got to be excited about what Buffalo is building up there. They've got some youth that hasn't really panned out a little bit. You want to give them a little bit more time. You got to move away from that Kyle Okposo contract. I'm sorry. But again, Kyle Okposo was in that year of super bad $6 million deals when everybody just ran around swapping $6 million contracts. The Islanders let Okposo go. Who do we sign? What's his name for $6 million the Islanders signed? You know, he's been useless. Louis Erickson. I mean, you just go down the list of those $6 million deals that were signed in that free agency year, and every single one of them has been pretty bad. Andrew Ladd, that $6 million deal has not worked out. Louis, we mentioned, has not worked out. We'll mention Louis again later on in the podcast here because he's going to be part of our rumor discussions. So that was just a bad year. The Sabres got to get away from that, but the Sabres have plenty of cap space. They're going to be in on these conversations where teams are in a cap crunch. The Sabres apparently also kicking the tires on Jason Zucker. They're kicking his tires around. Of course, Minnesota Wild are just dying to get rid of this guy. I don't know why. $5.5 million, cap hit. Very affordable, very workable. 25 to 35 goal scorer every single year consistently. I mean, he must be the most annoying locker room guy ever. But Minnesota is trying to trade this guy so bad, and I just can't understand why. The only explanation I can have, John, thanks for the help on the YouTube side. The only explanation I have for trying to get rid of Jason Zucker is he is literally your only tradable asset. Because you want to move away from the Zach Parise $7.5 million contract, but who's going to take that thing on as he has 6 years remaining? The NHL did the greatest thing ever by moving away from these circumvented contracts because all they're going to do is hurt teams and they are just going to stranglehold the Minnesota Wild for the next couple of years. So as you look at their roster and you're like, why are they trying to trade their 25, 35 goal scorer that's making $5.5 million, which is certainly affordable when you look at what the Buffalo Sabres just gave to Jeff Skinner here. He scored 15 more goals. He's making $4.5 million. Zucker is a slam dunk home run. He's got $5.5 million left on his deal for the next like 3 or 4 years. Zucker's a steal unless he's a total disaster off the ice and in the locker room, which I have not heard. This whoever gets Zucker is going to be that's a steal. That is a steal. Because you got a new general manager in Minnesota that's just frustrated, that's trying to make some sort of changes. And Zucker seems to be his only viable option. So if you're a Buffalo Sabres fan, get excited over this Jeff Skinner deal. Get excited over the fact that you might be landing Jason Zucker if they can make that deal happen. Now, Zucker's got a no trade, so we'll see if he wants to go. But again, like we've been talking about between Zucker and Phil Kessel, you know, there comes a point where you can only take so much, and knowing that your team wants to get rid of you, it's not a nice place to go in and work every day when you're not wanted. You know what I mean? So we'll keep our eye on that situation. But the reason why I said up at the top of the show here during the open that the Sabres deal kind of screws the Toronto Maple Leafs, I believe this. And the reason why is because if you just look at your AAV and you look at the value, Skinner's the first sort of major deal of this offseason, right? And so a lot of people are, justifiably or not, a lot of agents, I shouldn't say people, agents, not that agents aren't people, some of them, but a lot of agents are going to be throwing that contract around and saying, hey, look, this is what, you know, it sets the market. These early deals sort of set the tone for the market. So if you're saying that Jeff Skinner, I mean, if anybody's ever bought a house, you know that's the deal. It may not be fair. There's a lot of ins and outs and technicalities, but if you're looking at it, you know, you got to go by the comparables. You know, you got to figure out what is comparable. And if we're setting a market here for this early offseason 2019, yes, Jeff Skinner scored 40 goals, but he only had 63 points. And when you look at Mitch Marner, he had 94 points. 94. That's crazy. He had 94 this past season. The season before that, he had 69. And the season before that, he had 61. So you're putting your base of Mitch Marner at least nine. At least. And again, for the Toronto Maple Leafs, it's going to be fascinating to see how they're going to work this all out. But you're talking about Marner getting at least 11. Because if I'm Marner's agent, I'm going, my client scored 30 more points than the guy who just got $9 million. What do those 30 points mean to you? Now, granted, 68 of those points were assists. So the Maple Leafs are going to turn around and go, well, he's firing the puck off to John Tavares. He's firing the puck off to Austin Matthews. He's going to get some assists. The Leafs are going to sit there and they're going to break it down, which I did not do, of how many secondary assists things are. But it doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, the guy who scored 63 points just signed a $9 million contract. You have set a baseline for this offseason. And it's a little bit difficult for Marner and the Leafs now getting closer to a deal. Does Marner have 1 year left on his deal? No. He is a restricted free agent. He has to get a contract this season. Now, normally you would get like a standard raise. There's no way Mitch Marner is taking a standard raise, or a qualifying offer or something of that nature, which is a certain percentage over what you're making this past season. There's no way he's going to take that. Marner doesn't sign for $800,000 or $1.3 million. There's no way he's getting his big money contract right now. And William Nylander proved that, and other players proved that as well. Because the agents turn around and they go, you qualify my guy right now, you can get him for one more year, but then we're definitely gone. He won't even listen to you. So that's the power of the player right there. Players have a lot of power. And the restricted free agents, because there's so many in this offseason, they're going to have a ton as well. So Jeff Skinner definitely raising the market a little bit. And not even on AAV, but from what I understand, he also got like $7 million up front on a signing bonus. He's got some no movement clauses in there. I haven't been able to kind of nail down. Everywhere that I read about his deal, it's a little bit different on the no movement clause. So it'll take a little while till we understand what exactly that no move will be and what it is. But it's a big money contract. Big money contract for a 40 goal scorer, which is great. If you're the Sabres, it's great. You're excited about it. But at the same time, you know, you just put a lot of money in a guy who hit 40, who usually averages a little bit lower than that, and you're banking on that guy to be your guy with Jack Eichel, with maybe Zucker if he winds up coming in. And, you know, you're hoping that Mittelstadt comes around and Rasmus Dahlin becomes the player that we all are pretty sure he's going to become. So you got a lot of hopes Buffalo Sabres here. But it looks good. I'm not here to rain on the Sabres parade. If you're a Sabres fan and you're excited, you should be. I was surprised to see he signed the deal. When I first heard he signed, again, my first reaction was, why would you sign in June? And in Buffalo, of all places, doesn't Buffalo seem to be like a really depressing place? Here's a totally ignorant and naive comment, and I rarely make these, but this comes from somebody who's never been. But from an outsider looking in who has never visited Buffalo, and I'd be happy for somebody to tell me to shut up that I'm wrong, it just looks like a super depressing place. I mean, it really does. It's just this tiny, tiny city. And this is coming from somebody who lives, you know, in New York all his life. So every city is kind of tiny. But it just, like, it's like a tiny city. There's a lot of snow and it's really cold most of the year. Like, it's like Toronto without some of the pluses. The polite people, the universal healthcare. Toronto doesn't have a football team, but they have the Canadian football team, kind of, and at least they have basketball and baseball and hockey, right? Buffalo, you just have the Sabres and the Bills. That's it. There's no basketball there. There's no baseball there. I mean, I think they're big on the minor league baseball over there in Buffalo. As far as food goes, perhaps the greatest sports eating food ever given to us was given to us by the Buffalo City. So I'm forever grateful for that. But I mean, you can't eat wings all the time. What else is Buffalo known for cuisine-wise? I've never really heard anybody say to me, you got to check out the food scene in Buffalo. It's amazing. Seriously, they're getting chefs from all over the world going there to cook. I've never heard like, oh, Buffalo has this glitzy, glamorous part of town. And like, you know, you hear that in Vegas, you know, you hear that about Chicago, Obviously, in New York, there's tons of great places to live. Boston, Florida. Like, I mean, there's all these advantages. I don't really see the advantage to playing in Buffalo unless you love snow. Yeah, it's a blue-collar town. And I could appreciate that because I'm a blue-collar guy myself. But I don't. That's a hard sell. To me, there are very few hard sells. Like, we don't know if the Arizona Coyotes are going to be there tomorrow, and that's a true statement you can make any day of the week, but at least it's warm as hell over there, and they got good golf, you know? Seven people show up to see the Florida Panthers, but look how close it is to the beach in Miami. Like, there are way more better plus sides to every other franchise in the National Hockey League than the Buffalo Sabres. So you got to really want to play there. And good for Jeff Skinner, because clearly he does. So congratulations to him. I am calling this year's Stanley Cup Final, I am coining it as the Office Stanley Cup Final, because not only do we have the St. Louis Blues versus the Boston Bruins, but we have Pam versus Jim in a showdown that will forever be known as the Office NHL Stanley Cup Finals. The back and forth between Pam and Jim, Jenna Fischer and John Krasinski on Twitter alone has been well worth the price of admission for this playoffs. As if this playoffs wasn't entertaining enough or the Stanley Cup Finals wasn't wonderful enough, as a fan of The Office and the National Hockey League, we've had this added bonus of some wonderful entertainment over the course of these playoffs between Pam and Jim. This is better than will Pam and Jim get together in the early seasons in The Office. It's who's going to rub it in whose face. Who out of Pam and Jim are going to be able to drink from Lord Stanley's cup? Two nights ago, Jenna came up with the absolute latest and greatest slam on John Krasinski. When the St. Louis Blues went up in the series 3-2, she tweets, "Uh-oh, John Krasinski, looks like Pam might be going home with Stanley. Who would have guessed? Hashtag Stanley Cup, hashtag Let's Go Blues." And the double entendre, of course, as you can see, Dwight saying it's true. And there's Stanley right there from The Office shaking his head. Oh, I love it. It's the double meaning because it's Stanley from The Office and Lord Stanley's cup. Part of the reason why these playoffs have been so great. The Office Stanley Cup Final has been quite entertaining for the fans of The Office and the National Hockey League. Michael on Facebook, what's the deal with the Anaheim Ducks looking for a new head coach? The owners want the San Diego Gulls coach, yet the GM is taking his time. I trust in Bob Murray. I know this might be frustrating. I mean, we haven't heard peep about anything when it comes to the coaching vacancy. You've had every other coaching vacancy filled, essentially, right? And Anaheim is still sitting there with no head coach after firing Randy Carlyle. I know this is frustrating for Anaheim Ducks fans, and we'll talk a little bit more about your situation when we get into the Corey Perry thing. But you got to trust in Bob Murray. You know, the guy was there and helped you build that Stanley Cup team with Brian Burke. He's a phenomenal general manager. He's done a really good job. You haven't had some good years lately, but let's be honest. The jerseys have been cool as hell, right? Sorry, I realized that that's no help. There's a reason why Bob Murray is taking his time, and I don't know if anybody knows that reason outside of Bob Murray. I really don't. Is he interested in somebody? Does he know something? Is he just having a hard time deciding? I don't really know. But I know that there's probably a lot of really good coaches out there. And I know that if you are the Anaheim Ducks and you're Bob Murray, you are, and this might be the other reason why. It's not that we don't know a reason why, but this might be the other reason why. With the rumor that you're going to trade Corey Perry, you're heading into a severe rebuild. You have Getzlaf still there, right? You have 17 who's injured, and is he ever going to come back? This might be a whole new team. So do you want to go out there and get your guy? Or do you want to go out there and get the guy that's going to suffer through the rebuild for the next 3-4 seasons, fire him, and then get a guy? Where are you at with that? And so maybe this decision isn't as simple as let's go out and get the best head coach, right? We saw that with the Islanders last year. Like, let's just go get the best head coach. And they did. Maybe that's not the scenario. Maybe it's the who's going to be the guy? Who's going to be the guy that's going to come in and be the transitional coach? Because there's different types of coaches, right? There's the coach that you need that missing piece. He comes in and helps you. He's the final piece. He's the slam dunk. He's the guy that's going to handle the veterans. And there's also, well, we've got a roster full of new guys. Who's the guy that's going to teach the game and get these young kids and communication and all that kind of stuff, which is what we thought that the Buffalo Sabres were going to do. And it's not that it's not necessarily true. Not that Ralph Kruger can't do that, but he's not a young guy, right? He's not the young guy that everybody's kind of looking for. It's weird because it's not a National Hockey League thing, but you know, we always say, oh, this is a copycat league. The NFL is a copycat league. NHL is a copycat league. Sports in general is a copycat sort of situation. And I think when you look at the Rams, the LA Rams, and all the success they've had with Sean McVay, I think all these guys are looking for their Sean McVay, right? All these teams are like, who's my Sean McVay going to be? Who's that non-traditional young guy that's going to be in there and be able to communicate with the millennials, right? That's like the buzzword on these situations. Like, who's going to be able to talk to the millennials? And who's going to be good at X's and O's? And who's going to have success and also motivation, right? We all have those guys. Like, John Tortorella is not an X's and O's coach. He can do it, but he's a motivational coach. He's the guy you want screaming at you when you're down 3-0 in a game. You want John Tortorella screaming at you. You know what I mean? So I don't have a great explanation for you, Michael. And I think that's actually one of the great points about the Hockey Talk Show. When we don't know, we'll just tell you, as opposed to every other talking head in the hockey world who will just make up something and spit out cliches. Even though the copycat thing was a smidge cliche-ish, I still think it's true. I think what Sean McVay has done for coaching is something that every team is trying to do in every league. And I think to a point, sans the young person part, is what the Sabres did with Ralph Kruger. Because he was a non-traditional hire. He was way out of the game. He was working in soccer, right? A little bit of time since he was in the NHL last. Not a whole bunch of success there. Definitely more coaches available with better resumes and more success on their resumes, right? So that's the kind of thing with the Sabres. So Emily Ann, Ducks are looking at Lambert too. I mean, there's a lot of people that are looking, you know. There's a lot of people. Anaheim was supposed to interview Barry Trotz. Off topic, when is the league going to go back to wearing white at home? Been bugging me for years. Any news on Belmont? No news on Belmont other than our last episode. We talked about the Islanders to do a promotional partnership with the Belmont Stakes and the horse racing thing. That's not uncommon. But like I said in the last episode, it's not a bad sign. There is no other news. I know that's going to be painful for Islander fans to hear, but there is no other news on that. And yes, I agree. I would like to go back to white jerseys at home. I know this is controversial. I know that's a hot take. I just like the white better at home. I don't know. I always did. It's a baseball thing for me, right? I mean, you know, I like wearing the alternate jerseys at home and stuff, but I always liked white at home. I like the Yankees and the pinstripes at home and then the gray on the road. I always like that. I'm not really one for the colors at home. I also feel like the National Hockey League needs to step up their game a little bit, because if you see what the NFL has done with the color rush uniforms, and the NBA has all these crazy uniforms that they wear all the time. And I think that's a really good part of the NBA. And I don't really praise the NBA for much. But I think that every team should have at least 4 to 5 uniforms wearable in a season. Your home, your aways, your alternate. I think you should have a home alternate, right? Sort of a white alternate jersey. And I think you should have a special occasion jersey, at least one or two that you wear, similar to what Montreal does or the Toronto Maple Leafs do around St. Patrick's Day when they wear the Toronto St. Pat's jerseys. I think that every team should have specialty jerseys. And we've talked about this on the show too. You know, in San Jose, they were celebrating the Latin culture, and they wore those just beautiful, you know, Day of the Dead, you know, sort of style jerseys like that. They wore that in the warm-ups. Like, that should have been the game jersey for that day. I don't know why the NHL doesn't move to that. It's more merchandising money. They're missing an opportunity there, if you ask me. Missing an opportunity in a big way. All right, so back to the Office Stanley Cup Finals here. Jenna Fischer versus John Krasinski. They are loving life in St. Louis right now. Even their commercials have been totally taken over by the St. Louis Blues. This is the Missouri Baptist Hospital. And here they are throwing Gloria into their commercials. This is the anthem singer for the St. Louis Blues, singing to two brand new babies.
All the voices in your head calling Gloria.
With the Stanley Cup Finals, there you go. Missouri Baptist Medical Center. So they're loving it over there in St. Louis. And why not? Why not love it over there in St. Louis? In the commercials, it becomes part of the culture. I love seeing stuff like this in a big way, you know, where something totally, entirely takes over a town, takes over a city. Everybody in St. Louis, including Pam from The Office and the guy from Mad Men, are all behind the St. Louis Blues. All right, so let's get this out of the way and talk about the stupid referee controversy. I want to go to an interview with Steve Levy and the great Dan Patrick. Now, I'm a big fan of Dan Patrick's. I think he does a really good job. I don't think anybody really does too great of a job covering hockey. If I thought that, I wouldn't have started this show. But he does as good a job as anybody can do. And Steve Levy has been the hockey guy over at ESPN for the longest time. But let's be honest, we have more passionate fans tuning into the Hockey Talk Show than we have hockey fans tuning into ESPN for hockey coverage. I mean, it's practically non-existent. Barry Melrose and Steve Levy, I feel like, are just pity employees at this point for ESPN, because they're like, well, we got to have some hockey coverage, so we'll just pay these two guys, and that'll be the end of it. 4 minutes per Sports Center, and that'll be it. But Steve Levy went on Dan Patrick and said maybe the dumbest thing I've seen any hockey person say in the last couple days regarding the referee controversy from Game 5 in the Stanley Cup Final. We all know the play. I'll give you my thoughts on it, but I want to start with what Steve Levy said, because he said maybe the dumbest thing a hockey analyst can say. And by the way, let me preface this with saying I have a huge respect for Steve Levy. Anybody who's been a part of this game for as long as Steve Levy has and been able to hang on over there in ESPN, I've the utmost respect. But I don't know if he's busy running around with kids, or nobody at his job gives a crap what he says, so he can kind of get lazy and say stupid things sometimes. I don't know what it is, but his statement on the Dan Patrick Show, completely stupid. We'll start with Dan asking him about it. This audio courtesy of Dan Patrick.
There was controversy here. How big a controversy was last night, that finish?
I'll tell you about two texts I got. One from a St. Louis fan who recalled the Don Denkinger call that worked against the Cardinals.
Wow.
So that's for the older generation. And then I heard from an NFL assistant type who said the missed call last night was as bad, if not worse, than the missed pass interference in Rams Saints last year in the NFC Championship game. So. Yeah, so those are some of the comparisons from the younger people to the older people. This is a big deal, Dan, and I'll tell you, you don't want to get too deep into the officiating because I'm not sure how many people are actually interested. Yeah. The NHL has a depth issue at the official, at the referee spot, and they've kind of done it to themselves because of some awful mistakes in earlier rounds. They have put great referees on the bench, so they've iced these guys. And so they're way down their depth chart by the time they get to the Stanley Cup Final. And so you're seeing referees in the Stanley Cup Final who otherwise would not be calling these games. And that is definitely a factor in what happened last night.
Okay.
Okay, dumbest statement ever made by anybody ever anywhere. It comes out of a kind of legit statement, which is the NHL really did put themselves behind the eight ball a little bit when it comes to officiating, because of the San Jose Vegas call. They iced a couple officials on that. That is actually a great point. You did thin out your bench a little bit. But to call Kelly Sutherland and Wes McCauley not fit for calling a Stanley Cup final is absurd. my 3-year-old, who has watched a grand total of 1.5 hockey games in his entire life. Yes, he goes to bed at 7 o'clock. It's a little rough for him. Knows better than that. I mean, Kelly Sutherland, who did not make the call in this game, and Wes McCauley are two of the absolute best referees in the game. And that's not just my opinion, but when I talk to hockey people, when you hear from general managers, head coaches, they will all tell you the same thing. When they take that sheet, every game in the National Hockey League, this is one of the things I used to do for the Islanders, you got a information packet. Starting lineups, head coaches, trainers, referees, what game it is in the National Hockey League. I always like watching that. This is game 44 for the St. Louis Blues. It's game 1,673 for the National Hockey. It tells you how many, it gives you all that information. When the play-by-play guys spit out something really intelligent, you're like, wow, they're really smart. Where'd they get that? It's on a piece of paper that we hand to them, all right? Everybody knows that. So when a general manager, when a head coach gets that piece of paper and they see Kelly Sutherland's name on it, they breathe a sigh of relief. They know, this is a guy who's going to give me a fair shot at the game tonight. Wes McCauley is maybe the best referee in the game. Maybe the best referee in the last 20 years since Kerry Frazier hung up the skates. And you have Steve Levy going, now we have guys that aren't qualified to call. What are you talking about? What the hell are you talking about? You can't go on and say stupid stuff like this and not expect to be checked by somebody like me. Because that's a dumb statement. And I have a lot of respect for Steve Levy and John Butcher-Gross. And again, all the guys, all the hockey guys that come out of ESPN, nobody pays attention to ESPN who likes hockey. If you like hockey, you find shows like this one because ESPN sucks. I mean, if ESPN was good at their coverage of hockey, I wouldn't be doing this. Right? If CBS was good at their hockey coverage, I wouldn't be doing this. NBC wouldn't be covering hockey at all if they didn't own the contracts. And even their coverage is suspect at times. So you can't just go out there and spread stupidity without me checking you. And Steve Levy, that's the dumbest statement I've ever heard. Legitimately the dumbest statement that I have ever heard. Because those two are some of the best referees. All right, now here again is another thing that makes me happy to do this show, because I feel like you, the hockey fan, needs to hear this. The non-call in game 5, I have no problem with. I have no problem with it. Kelly Sutherland looking right at it. Bozak trips the Bruins player. Bozak looks back like he's guilty. All the talk that I hear, oh, the guy looked back. Bozak looked back. He was going to argue the call. Guys, I am fine with a non-call here. I am fine with a non-call. And this is the problem. Steve Levy on the Dan Patrick Show, who doesn't usually cover hockey. You have all these sports guys, all these hockey guys calling into the show. I'm sick and tired of the majority of the coverage for the National Hockey League being some sort of controversial thing about bad refereeing or concussions and fights. And that's all the mainstream media cares to pay attention about when it comes to hockey. That is it. And it's not like the National Hockey League is being singled out here, because the same thing with the NFL. The NFL only, you know, people only care about the NFL and mainstream media when it's Deflategate or some guy beat his wife or one of those things. You know what I'm saying? Not that the NFL doesn't get enough of their coverage. They get plenty of coverage. But the point I'm trying to make is when these stories start to gain heat and momentum, it makes me sick. It drives me freaking crazy. I can't stand it. Because it all becomes nonsensical horse crap that nobody who's a real hockey fan cares about. I'm not going to say that was a good non-call, but I'm okay with the call. And now everybody, because of all this hubbub, because the Steve Levy's and the half-hearted hockey analysts go on all these other shows. Well, the NHL, look, the NHL, I've said it, they had a rough go. The referees have had a rough go. It's not been a good playoffs for them. It is not. They went out there and they've had a bad run. Just like all of us have a bad day at work and a bad week at work and a bad month at work. We all go through it, right? The referees have gotten to that scenario. But now you're in a case where a referee has to make a judgment call picks one way and we all want to go ahead and add 5,000 other referees. Let's get an eye in the sky. Let's have somebody in Toronto call down and make calls. Give me a break. You don't need all this extra garbage. Let me tell you something. This is a slippery slope, man. If I'm the National Hockey League, I would listen to what I'm going to say. You do not want to take control of the game out of the referee's hands. It's not the greatest system in the world, but it's the system that works. We talk about voting in the United States of America. Oh, we got to change our voting system. We got to change our vote. Why is there no central voting system? People go into high school gymnasiums and cast their vote for the president of the United, leader of the free world. We pick in a high school gymnasium or a grammar school cafeteria. There's a reason why. You can't hack that system. You can't hack that system. You have one central voting system, you can hack it. There's a reason why. It may not sound great. It may not make the most sense to you at first, but when you really study it, there's a reason why. There's a reason why the system in the National Hockey League works. It's in one group of people's hands. You can't get more people involved in this situation. Now, I've heard things like, oh, well, we should have referees call down and blah, blah, blah. I don't love it. I don't love it. You're slowing down the game, and now you have, essentially what you're doing is you're taking one person's judgment and swapping it out for another. None of what happens in a game, especially the National Hockey League, more than anybody else, because baseball is slow, basketball is slow, football is kind of slow. The National Hockey League is the fastest sports league out there. So the referees have to be the best because things are moving by so quickly. You're never going to get it right 100% of the time, but it's all going to be left down to judgment. And in that moment, Kelly Sutherland looked at that and went, the guy was going for the puck, not the player. He did trip the player. I could call that, but I'm not going to. Now, here's what drives me crazy, and I didn't write it down, and I probably should have. But if you go back to the early part of that game, it was in the first period. So that I was watching the highlights because I had nothing to do. I was playing with my kids, so I threw on the NHL Network, and they were replaying the game. I saw the play again. First period, a Bruin goes in and trips a St. Louis Blue, and there's no call. And that's the whole point. Referees know the temperature of the game. They know what they want to call. Like how an umpire has his strike zone. Okay, he's calling up a top corner of the plate. He's not calling bottom. You know, he's not calling this. I kind of know where my strike zone is tonight. The referees have the same exact thing. They know, I let that go for Boston earlier. I'm going to let it go for St. Louis. Now, it's unfortunate that the Blues scored 15, 25 seconds later, whatever it was. But you're telling me that every time a goal is scored now, you want an eye in the sky to go back and watch the previous minute to see if there was any infractions to call back goals? This is what you want? That's the National Hockey League you want. It's nonsensical. Things come up and people start screaming and they don't think it through. That's not what I want. Oh, it was a hand pass or they missed this or they missed that. Guys, people miss calls all the time. But that's the system. It works. And the way you're proposing to fix it is the flawed humans on the ice who have an opinion, who have a judgment, who make a call and make a decision, you want to swap that out for the same flawed person not on the ice who are going to make a call and make it. It doesn't make any sense. There's no robot up there. There's no absolute power. Whoever the National Hockey League would deem to put up there would be the same flawed human being. Now, you might say, well, Ant, there's absolutes, right? Hand passes are without question. Offsides is without question. Yeah, that's fine. I give you that. But if you're going to do something like that, to me, that's got to be a crew member. Like, the league has crews. I actually think they swap out a little bit more than usual, but usually the guys will stick together. If you're going to have that person, it should be a referee. It should be the fourth or fifth person in the crew. And people are talking about, oh, I know it'll fix the calls. Take one of the referees off the ice and put them up on top. Again, I don't want to live in a world where it's like, yay, we scored. Okay, let's wait for the guy upstairs to watch the last 2 minutes to see. And then where is your point? The last 30 seconds before a goal, the last 90 seconds before a goal, where do you cut it off? Because then you know what's going to happen? People are going to be like, oh, look, 3.5 minutes ago, it was kind of offside there. That the play should have been whistled dead. Now, I mean, it's just, it's insanity. It's insanity. So I don't mind the Kelly Sutherland non-call. I understand that the Bruins are upset. I understand Cam Neely chucking a water bottle against the wall. Bruins fans, you guys can scream about it all you want. Fair game, man. You guys are, that hurt. That hurt. But when you step outside of that, it's pretty fair. It's pretty fair because the Bruins didn't get a penalty when they had that same situation, you know, in the first period. And tripping, by the way, he is absolutely within his right to put his whistle in his pocket at that moment. I don't know why. And nobody is pointing that out. Nobody is pointing that out. I'm Steve Levy going on the Dan Patrick Show. I go, yeah, I get why Bruins fans don't like it, Dan, but he can absolutely make that call. He could put his whistle in his pocket. Just like how umpires and check swings in baseball and, you know, pass interference calls. Ask any NFL analyst. Nobody knows what the hell pass interference is because it's all over the place. You know, penalties can happen. You can get slashed on the wrist and there's no call. Why didn't you call that, ref? Because your guy just did that to somebody else. Some nights they want to control that right off the bat or put a stop to it. They'll call the penalty and they'll tell everybody, stop with the up high hits. Stop, get control of your sticks, guys, because I'm going to be calling it all game. I can't have it. Right? Referees set a tone and a mood for every game. And I'm sick of people going like, shut up. Zdeno Chara. I'm going to put this up for everybody. I mean, I just can't believe this guy. Zdeno Chara has missed 4 games out of 184 playoff games in 14 postseason appearances. That's epic. That is epic. I mean, I saw that. I just couldn't believe that. I told you the last preview of game 5 that he would be in the lineup, and he was. And it was a huge lift for the Boston Bruins. I think he'll help them tonight. Also, people are talking about Conn Smythe. We have to get that out of the way now because Lord Stanley will be in the house and so will the Conn Smythe trophy. People are talking about, oh, I don't know. You know, here's the thing about my Conn Smythe thoughts again for the Office Stanley Cup final here. If it wasn't for Jordan Binnington, Ryan O'Reilly would be my Conn Smythe winner for sure. 20 points in 24 games, really scoring at the right moments. Winning faceoffs, just playing great hockey. He's playing St. Louis Blues hockey, but what's interesting is he sort of defined what St. Louis Blues hockey was this year. Do you know what I mean? It's the chicken and the egg argument, and there is no answer because Ryan O'Reilly has come in and sort of set the tone for what this Blues team, what style they're going to play. He's playing it very, very well. But Jordan Binnington, for the love of God, 2.46 goals against average. Stealing you games left and right. You wouldn't even be in the playoffs if it wasn't for the guy. Jordan Binnington in a slam dunk walk-off home run is my pick for the Conn Smythe. Were the Blues to win tonight? Why I don't think the Blues will win tonight? Because if you go back and you look at how the Bruins won the Cup back in 2011, they were down 3-2 to the Vancouver Canucks. And they came back and they won Game 6 and Game 7. Now, it was reverse order. Game 6 was in Boston. Game 7 was in Vancouver. But I would argue that that is even more difficult. It's easier to force a Game 7 at home than it is to win a Game 7 on the road. So when I look at tonight, I honestly, it is a coin toss. I do think the Blues can win tonight. I really, really do. I think they have momentum. I think Ryan O'Reilly is playing well. And I think that if you look at Game 5, the Bruins, I forget what the numbers were, the Bruins outshot the Blues, like 39-24 or something like that. They outchanced them. They played a better game, but the Blues did just enough to win, and Jordan Binnington did just enough to win, and I think that they can really do that tonight behind their own home crowd. This series is close. I said it would go 6 or 7. We're here. I picked Boston to win. I still think that Boston is going to force a game 7 here, but I think that the Blues, honest to goodness, if they get the bounces, if the hockey gods are on their side tonight, they can win this thing. And that's my message in the locker room. Just go out there and play your game. Hit hard in the first period. Don't worry about giving up more shots. Don't worry about giving up more chances. That's why we have Jordan Binnington in that. You don't have to worry about those things. Focus on the game. Hit, forecheck, just put pucks on net. The second goal, the game-winning goal for St. Louis wasn't pretty. It was supposed to be a pass. It went off the inside pad of Tuukka Rask, right? Like, that's the kind of game you need to win. By the way, the Blues, if they win tonight, they're not winning 5-0. Like, that is not, if there's one thing I'm positive about, this is not going to be a rout 5-0. It's not going to be. It's not going to be a dominating performance whatsoever. It's going to be scrappy and nasty, and they're just going to eke it out if they win tonight. But if I have to make a pick, I got to stick with my original pick and say the Bruins in 7. They've done it before. I think they can do it again. McAvoy looks phenomenal. Krug looks great. By the way, the other reason why St. Louis wins, because they hit Krug and McAvoy. They hit the crap out of those two guys, and that's their game. That's their game. Leave a little bit of space, as little space as possible. By the way, congratulations to Vladdy Tarasenko on becoming a dad. They just had a baby. He will be in the lineup for tonight for Game 6. All right, should we get to some rumors here? Rumor part of the show. We'll run through these as much as we can. Let's see here. Where do you think Duchesne and Panarin end up? I'm assuming the Rangers will make a huge offer to Panarin. Think the Rangers are going to make an offer to Panarin? Rumor lately is Bobrovsky to Florida. Not sure why, other than they desperately need a goaltender, and he does not want to be in Columbus anymore. Feels like there's a couple of other places he could go. If I'm the Edmonton Oilers, I am putting some serious talk into Bobrovsky, because I can really turn around my franchise quite quickly if I'm the Edmonton Oilers, if I can get Bobrovsky under contract. It's going to be a little difficult because the Oilers have to get away from that Lucic deal, which is going to be an issue. But if I'm the Edmonton, I don't see how Bobrovsky to Florida is as done as all the rumors suggest. But the latest rumors is that Panarin is going to go down to Florida with Bobrovsky. And that would be kind of amazing because the Panthers are kind of built for a big UFA splash. Like, if you're able to land those two guys, the Panthers become a playoff team, especially with Coach Q, instantly. And you got a new coach coming in, and now is kind of the year to do it, right? Now is kind of the year to be like, hey, wipe the slate clean, new beginnings, let's go. The Panthers were pretty good. Their offensive players can play some good D. Bobrovsky and Panarin come in with offense and obviously goaltending. That would help them tremendously. Let's talk about Duchesne for a second here, because there are some pretty big rumors on Duchesne. Columbus is not out of it. Yarmo is talking. He's trying to get something done, trying to keep Matt Duchesne in a Columbus Blue Jackets uniform. I still think that's a possibility. I still think that worked. I still think that he's desperate to do that because he was kind of all in on this trade deadline, and now you kind of got to play that hand out if you're Jarmo Kekalainen. So you're probably willing to overpay for Matt Duchesne. And Matt Duchesne, he kind of, like we said in the last episode, he kind of picked things up a little bit. He kind of made his time there worthwhile. So Jarmo is going to throw everything at him. And as we saw with Jeff Skinner, you can put an extra year in there, right? And you can structure the deal however you want. The two huge assets for the Columbus Blue Jackets in re-signing Matt Duchesne, they have cap space. And they can give an extra year. And that is something that not a lot of other teams can do. Some other teams have cap space, but they can't give that extra year, right? So the obvious advantage goes to the Columbus Blue Jackets keeping him. Panarin's going to walk, so you want to keep those goals on your money ball list, right? You want to keep those stats there for yourself. It all kind of makes sense. But does Matt Duchesne want to stay in Columbus for the next 8 years of his life? And again, just like I said with Jeff Skinner, it's got to be that deal that's like, holy cow, I am not going to get this anywhere else in order for him to sign in June. Because it just doesn't make sense for Matt Duchesne not to go to July 1. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. The latest rumor that I find pretty interesting, and we're going to start to hear this a lot more, because what you're going to start to hear for the next couple of days is every single team with $25+ million in cap space, which there are quite a few, come out of the woodworks and be rumored to get enter a free agent here. And the latest one is the Arizona Coyotes, which I find very interesting. And the reason being is because we haven't been able to nail it down quite yet what it is, but Andrew Barroway, who has been the latest owner of the Arizona Coyotes, is moving to a minority stake in the team. He was supposed to be the big money guy that was going to come in and spend money, and what a surprise, he didn't. So now we flip over the page, and we're still looking at, we don't know who the new owners are. John Shannon of Sportsnet up in Canada has been the only one discussing this. He hasn't been able to find out who the new owners are just yet. He won't until the National Hockey League decides to announce who the new owners are. But he did confirm that Andrew Barroway is going to move to a minority stake. So what does that mean? That means that for the first time in a long time, we have the possibility of the Arizona Coyotes being able to spend a hell of a lot of money, right? They can actually start to, you know, go out there and open up their wallet a little bit, because right now the money that they have all tied up in players has been on guys that are like buyouts, and like they have Marian Hossa, right? They're not paying him real cash, but he's counting towards their cap. So they have a lot of those scenarios right now. I think Mike Ribeiro is still on their buyout history, right? There's a lot of those sort of instances where they're overpaying some guys. But you got Oliver Ekman-Larsson under contract. Alex Goligoski and Nick Jarmolson is under contract for the next couple of years. Jacob Chychrun is signed long-term to a very cap-friendly $4.6 million. And you really need to figure out your offense, you know, because I like Nick Schmaltz, but he's not the offensive leader that I want on my franchise. And Derek Stepan is getting up there in years and not the player he used to be, which was the player he never really became. So, yeah, I need a centerman. I need a strong centerman on my team. He's the best available. Duchesne to the Coyotes makes sense. Oh, Adam on the YouTube chat. There you go. He's got it. Arizona to make a push for Matt Duchesne, obviously. Smart rumor. Makes a ton of sense. I would listen to it. And again, if you're Matt Duchesne, aside from the fact that Arizona is a place where you got caught talking in the back of an Uber, talking about how crummy your coach was, aside from that, there's not really a lot of knocks to Arizona. They'll pay you your money. Beautiful weather all year long. Golf all year long. Nice neighborhoods. Beautiful towns. Great food. What's not to love? What's not to love? You sacrifice that seventh year, that eighth year, I should say. You can only get seven, but maybe it's worth it. Maybe he looks at what they're building over there with Clayton Keller and Oliver Ekman-Larsson. And Antti Rantanen is under contract for the next couple of seasons. Antti Raanta. What did I say? Rantanen? Antti Raanta is under contract for the next couple of years. And maybe you're like, you know what? Maybe I'll go here. Maybe I'll sign here for 7 years because I know in my last 2 years, I'll be playing alongside Austin Matthews. So that'll be real exciting. So Matt Duchesne, possible for Columbus. But as we've seen with Jeff Skinner, Columbus is going to have to offer the sweetest of sweetheart deals to get him to sign prior to July 1. And again, if I'm in the free agents camp, it doesn't matter who it is, Jeff Skinner, Matt Duchesne, anybody else I'm going, unless you get every single thing that you want to a T and you're happy to play here, go to July 1st. Go to July 1st all the way. We talked about Carlson a little bit in the last episode. Carlson to Ottawa makes sense to me because if you're going to, again, as agents are starting to take temperatures, so clearly somebody in Jeff Skinner's camp said, you know what, Jeff, you're not going to get $9 million a season from somebody else. And we're not going to get that eighth year. And you love Buffalo, right? You're one of the few people on the planet who loves the city of Buffalo. So you're not going to get better than this. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take the deal that the agent's going to be able to go to the player and say, you're not going to get better than this. And the way that these guys are going to go to free agency is the agent's going to say, look, this is what they're offering. Matt Duchesne's agent's going to go, this is what they're offering. We might be able to do better. We might leave a little bit on the table without that eighth year, but we might be able to find a better situation for you. Better players, better coach, better hockey market, You know, the other thing you have to think about, too, is Columbus, not exactly a hockey hotbed. Great market. But what people fail to realize is when you go to the Rangers, when you go to Chicago, when you go to Toronto, not only is there money to be earned on the ice, but there's money to be earned in endorsements. Auston Matthews, Mitch Marner, John Tavares, they're hawking gas stations and apartment rentals and all kinds of garbage, car dealerships, all kinds of stuff up there in Toronto, making all kinds of extra scratch. You're not going to get that in Columbus. You're not going to get that in Arizona either. But there'll be some of it. So I can see as Carlson goes around and, oh, he's kind of injury prone and, oh, we're not going to offer him this or that. Again, you got to look at it. If you're Erik Karlsson and you go, well, I can make $7 million a year playing for this team, or I can go back home and make $1 million less and 2 years less and be comfortable, I'm going to do that. Family matters. Hashtag family matters. It was a good show, not just because of Steve Urkel, but it's poignant for today because Erik Karlsson's wife is an Ottawa girl. Ottawa or Montreal makes sense for that reason, right? We're seeing that as well with the Toronto Maple Leafs and Patrick Marleau. His wife, his family, West Coasters. They want to go back. That's done. Marleau is gone. You will not see him in the Maple Leaf uniform. He has put his house up for sale. He is done. He is done as a Toronto Maple Leaf. So he's getting out of there no matter what. Similar to Corey Perry, which we'll talk about that next. But similar to Corey Perry, Patrick Marleau is done, and it's come at the right time. Because if I'm the Toronto Maple Leafs and I have to get Mitch Marner under contract and it's going to cost me $10.5 to $11.5 million to do so, I have to get Patrick Marleau off my books and I have to get Nazem Kadri off my books right away. Because there's $10 million right there. Makes that pill a lot easier to swallow. A lot easier to swallow. If you have those two off of your cap. Do I think Minnesota makes an offer to Anders Lee? Yep. I said this in a previous episode, and I know it hurts because you don't want to lose your captain 2 years in a row. But let's be honest, things are looking up in the island. Anders is a big part of that. But hashtag family matters. Anders Lee is a Minnesota dude. That's his home. Minnesota has a rebuilding, not rebuilding, but a retooling situation. New general manager, new direction. If they're willing to get Zucker off the books, you've got to have a good offensive presence to come in and replace that. Anders Lee fits the bill. Again, I know this hurts for fans of the team that we say it about, but it holds true. If you're a free agent, why would you sign in June? It's June 9th, guys. It's June 9th. You're going into the draft. There's not going to be a ton of free agency re-signings in the next couple of weeks. If your team's been out of it for a little while, nobody is getting re-signed June 15th. You know what I'm saying? The Islanders have been out of it for weeks by now. If the deal's not done by now, he's going to go out and listen to other teams. And if you're listening to other teams and, oh, I can go play at home, that's going to be an attractive offer. It's great to be the captain of a franchise. The Islanders seem to have a great locker room. If Anders Lee goes back, kudos to Lou Lamoriello. Kudos to Anders for getting a deal done. But when you sit down and you break it down, it doesn't make sense from Anders Lee's standpoint, especially if a team like Minnesota is going to turn around and offer him the same money, if not a little bit more money. It just doesn't make any sense. God, they need a center too. Mikko Koivu is 36 years old. Zach Parise is 34. Erik Staal is 34. I mean, you know, it's time to sort of turn that roster over a little bit, which is clearly what Minnesota is trying to do, which is clearly what Paul Fenton is trying to do. But he's got to move away from one of those big contracts, and that's going to be hard to do. Come June 26th, teams can talk to free agents. I think it's actually June 23rd this year. For whatever reason, it's a little bit earlier. I think that might be restricted free agents. I do think the Islanders will be able to re-sign Robin Lehner. It's if they want to or not. The power in that relationship is with the Islanders because you have Thomas Greiss and you have Ilya Sorokin. If you believe in Ilya Sorokin so much, you can walk away from Robin Leonard and not have it hurt you. If you believe in Ilya Sorokin so much, it kind of gives you leverage where you can turn around to Robin Leonard and say, hey, we want to have you back, but we can't give you $5.5 million a year. We need you to sign for a team-friendly deal again. And if he's really happy in this situation, he'll sign. But again, not to sound like a broken record,
why would you re-sign in June?
Because again, if I'm the Edmonton Oilers, I'm going, Mr. Bobrovsky, what could we do to get you here? No? Okay. Mr. Leonard, what could we do to get you here? Because if I'm Edmonton, I am a great goaltender away from turning my franchise around in one season. One season. Ken Holland gets a great goaltender in there, and that franchise is turned around in one. They make the playoffs next year. The Edmonton Oilers make the playoffs next. Doesn't fix all their problems. Doesn't make them a Stanley Cup winning team. They're in the playoffs next year. That is vast improvement in progress. That is all they need. That's all they need. Jesse Puljujarvi says he intends on playing in the NHL next year, but he admits it could not be with the Oilers. He might be traded. The Edmonton Journal says if the Oilers intend to trade Puljujarvi, Jim Matheson suggests packaging him to the Winnipeg Jets for Nikolaj Ehlers would make sense. He points out the Jets face a potential salary cap crunch, re-signing Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor and defenseman Jacob Trouba. Offer them Puljujarvi, that's Patrick Laine's buddy, your second-round pick, and a defenseman, Ethan Bear, for Nick Ehlers, suggests Matheson. The Oilers have cap issues, obviously, this summer. They have $73 million invested in 18 players. They need to shed the Lucic deal. Now, we've heard all sorts of crazy things. Lucic for Phaneuf. Phaneuf's going to get bought out. All this kinds of crazy stuff. That'll all have to shake itself out. We got to see what's what when it comes to that one. The most interesting free agent move, though, by far to me, or player move by far that I saw today, was the fact that Corey Perry is on his way out of Edmonton. This makes a lot of sense for me. Corey Perry is making a lot of money. He is no longer the player he was. You're looking at a roster that needs some refreshment. You don't know if Kessler is going to be back for you guys. Now is kind of the time to make that move. They won a cup. They hung around for a little bit. They were decent. But again, like the Rangers, like a lot of teams, when they look at it and they go, nah, this guy's 34, this guy's 35, this guy's 36. We got to move on. And Corey Perry is either going to be traded, and if they can't find a suitor for him to be traded, then they're going to buy his contract out. I wonder if the Leafs are going to buy out Marleau. It's not the ideal situation for them, salary-wise, but I'd have to go back and look and see if they can, because they got to get away from that deal. Somebody will take Nazem Kadri. Nazem Kadri is a great second-line center. Doesn't make a lot of money, got a little bit of an attitude problem. If you can get that fixed, you're going to get a good player, just like Zucker. I don't know what his issue is off the ice, but you're going to get a good player if you're getting Jason Zucker. But moving on from Corey Perry makes sense. Getzlaf still has a little bit in the tank. You leave him there, he can mentor the new guys, but you got to refresh that roster. And going back to Michael's question from earlier on the coaching staff, maybe this is the holdup. Maybe they want to see what their roster is going to look like before they go out there. Maybe Anaheim's made an offer to somebody and they're sitting there going, well, I'm going to kind of see what your roster is going to be. I doubt that. Coaches usually like to get coaching jobs no matter what the roster is, but who knows? Elliot Friedman is reporting that he heard the Oilers are kicking the tires on James Neal. Friedman feels that the Flames have two options with Neal: either bring him back and hope he bounces back from this season's subpar performance, or trade him and take another contract on in return. I think James Neal's got a lot in the tank. I think Calgary did not work again for a team that is looking to salvage something from the yard sale, for lack of a better term. He's not a free agent, but you can get him for, you know, you can get him on your team. I think James Neal is going to be a valuable asset. I think he's older. I think he's a little bit up there, but he's got grit. He's got scoring. I kind of like James Neal. I think it would be a good addition to any team. How many years does Ladd have left? That is a good question. And I wonder, too, in this flurry of free agencies and RFAs this year, if we're going to see a lot of buyouts. Because there are definitely a lot of candidates for buyouts. As we said earlier, Kyle Lockpost was one of them. Corey Perry is one of them. Patrick Marleau is one of them. Andrew Ladd is signed up into the 22-23 season. So, he's got 4 years left. That hurts. I would severely try and walk away from that contract if I was Lou Lamoriello. In fact, if I'm Lou Lamoriello, I'm pretty sure I've already looked into the fact that I'm trying to walk away from that contract. The thing that sucks is, and this is what every general manager is going to do with Corey Perry, with all these guys, they're going to try and trade them first. Get them off the books. And what it's going to boil down to is no general manager is going to sucker another general manager in here. It's going to be bad contract for bad contract with the hope that the guy that you get will magically turn it around. Like, you're hoping for the change of scenery to kick in and work out. You know what I mean? So that is the Corey Perry situation. As far as free agents go, you know, a lot of people are kicking the tires on Jason Zucker. There's rumors that Zucker goes to the Canucks. We'll have to see about that. Zaitsev apparently wants out of Toronto. I think Nikita Zaitsev will be an asset somewhere else. If the Islanders were to find a suitor for Letty, which I don't know why they would, Nikita Zaitsev to the Islanders would make a lot of sense because Lou's the guy who gave him that big fat contract that nobody seems to like up in Toronto. But you know what? He doesn't seem comfortable in Toronto, and it doesn't seem like he wants to play there. Here's a good question. Any dark horse team you say making a big splash this summer? It really depends on what you're talking about because, like we said, I think that the Arizona Coyotes could really turn some heads around if they got new, fresh money in their ownership situation. So I think if they're willing to spend, and this story that is going to be around anytime a struggling payroll team gets a new owner, they're always going to be like, maybe he'll spend money. I think the Arizona Coyotes have a chance to make a splash. But again, if you look at the Florida Panthers, if the Bobrovsky and Duchesne thing is true, to me, that's a massive splash. That not only puts the Florida Panthers in the playoffs next season, along with Coach Q, that puts the Florida Panthers in the conversation of, I think this team could make the Eastern Conference Finals. Because what's stopping them? They have Trocheck and, you know, just great defensive forwards, fast, skilled forwards. You'll have goaltending. You'll have another centerman. You got a pretty decent D. I mean, the Florida Panthers scare the bejesus out of me if they land those two guys. So that I could see being the big splash. And then outside of that, you know, there's not a ton. I mean, you know, Jeff Skinner, a 40-goal scorer, was kind of like the guy, right? Once he goes, there's not a ton of love in the UFA category. There's a lot in the RFA category. Again, automatic splash, biggest splash goes to whoever actually offers an offer sheet this year. That's the big splash. But as far as UFAs go, once you get past Bobrovsky, you have Carlson with his injury things, and he's 29, and who's going to want to give him a 7-year deal? Only somebody who gets desperate. Jordan Eberle had 20 goals this year, but he's sort of on the high end of available free agents. Again, we talked about Duchesne, and whoever gets him, I wouldn't call that a splash, but, you know, that is what it is. I really think the intriguing free agent that nobody's talking about is Joe Pavelski. Yeah, you're a little bit worried about him bleeding from the head, but Pavelski had 38 goals this last year. That's pretty good. But again, Jeff Skinner has set the market, right? $9 million a year. Go look at your teams and see who can fill their needs and still give out $9 million to Joe Pavelski at 34. But I think he might be a steal for certain teams. Panarin, we talked about, most likely to the Rangers, so that's not going to be a surprise or a splash to anybody. And then your free agents are just, you know, Tyler Myers is a great ad, but that's not going to be a splash. I think the splash is going to, it's a great question. I think the splash is going to come from your RFAs and the offer sheet scenario. Seattle does not come in this coming season. They'll come in the next season. If I'm Lou, I let Eberle walk with Bellows and Wahlstrom coming. John, I totally agree with that. there's far more youth and excitement coming for the New York Islanders in an already great locker room. Again, the Islanders had their best year when their huge star left. They played better as a team without one guy. So I have a hard time when people are like, you think the Islanders are going to get Panarin? Honestly, look at it. Would you want Panarin? Because I wouldn't. I really wouldn't. I know that sounds crazy to say, but I really wouldn't. Real. Michael Dalcolo is going to have a breakout season next season. I hope so, because I have yet to see that. I have yet to see it from Michael Dalcolo. I'm very down on Michael Dalcolo, and I have been for a little while. I'm not butthurt about Joshua Hosang being slighted over Michael Dalcolo. I'm totally okay with that. I haven't seen the confidence from Dalcolo's game that I want to see. And I haven't really seen the skating ability either. But I'm hopeful. He could. And I think that would be fantastic. But I wouldn't be surprised if Dalcolo gets one of those lost in the shuffle guys where you have Wahlstrom and you have Bellows much higher on those two coming up and superseding him. And again, why would the Islanders trade Nick Letty-Ant? Well, because Noah Dobson. That's the only reason. Noah Dobson is going to make the Islanders team next year, and you have Dobson, Pulak, Pelech, and Taves. There's not as much room now for Nick Letty. I would hate to give away Nick Letty. I'd rather give away Johnny Boychuk, but not a lot of teams are going to be interested in Boychuk. You could actually get a fairly decent return for Nick Letty, for sure. And if you package Hosang into that deal, yeah, again, another change of scenery kind of guy. How soon should we expect teams to start picking up guys to leave exposed to the expansion draft? You know what, J Marks, it's a great question. I think a lot of teams learned from the Vegas thing that they put a little bit too much emphasis and people got a little too caught up in that. And they gave the Vegas Golden Knights a lot. Vegas got a lot of players and a lot of picks. And teams made some really dumb moves, i.e. the Islanders were carrying three goaltenders for a whole year, kind of ruined their flow for those goalies for the entire year. And it was the reason why Halak left. And now he's two games away from winning a cup with Boston. So I don't think teams are going to worry about that stuff too much. It's on their mind, but it's like the fourth and fifth. And like, you know, if everything is equal between a decision and this looks better for the Seattle thing, they'll probably go with that. But again, like I said, it's fourth or fifth down on the list in a scenario where everything is equal. It's not going to mean that much. It's really, really not going to mean that much. Dave's picking the Blues tonight to win. I am picking Boston. I still think Boston's going to pull it out just like they did in 11 when they came back from down 3-2 to capture their Stanley Cup right there. I told you I would end off with some Ranger news. Look at this guy right here. Notice him? Used to seeing him with 93 on his back. There's Mika Zibanejad DJing up on the stage on the ones and twos. How about that? He was DJing alongside Tiesto and Albin Myers, who apparently are really big DJs. I've heard of Tiesto before. I don't know where this was. And I just realized that I don't really care. But it's cool to see Mika Zibanejad up there DJing. And also, as if we needed a reason to say that the Rangers definitely are going to sign Kaapo Kakko, the Rangers signed Tarmo Runinen. And that might mean nothing to you, but if you're a Rangers fan, you should know Tarmo Runinen came from Kaapo Kakko's team in Europe. And supposedly, from what I hear, very good friends, very, very close friends. So now Kaapo Kakko will have a buddy over here on the Rangers when he eventually gets drafted. Do I think Chara gets his number retired? That's a damn good question. I think if they win the cup this year, there's no doubt about it. I don't know if he has to win to do it, though. But if he brings you two cups, that's kind of hard to argue against. He is such a great guy, by the way. He is beloved in Boston. Beloved. I mean, people, you heard that. You heard the cheers that he got game 5 over there in Boston. I mean, that was an insane amount of cheer. Insane amount. That's a good question. I think he does, especially if he wins cup number 2, there's no denying it. But if he doesn't, there's still a chance. We'll leave it there. Give me the Bruins tonight. I think they're going to dominate. I think they played slightly better in Game 5. They didn't win. That's okay. But I think that the Blues are going to have to repeat a Game 5 performance. Score at the right time. Hit. They got to have an identical game if they want to win the Cup tonight. I really believe that. I really believe that. And I don't, by the way, I'm not opposed to seeing how this game goes. Even if the Bruins win, I pick the Bruins in 7. But I'm not opposed to saying that the Blues can win in Boston. Because they did it in Game 5, and I didn't think they were going to do it then. But clearly they showed that that's not a big deal. Again, we are in the year of the Office Stanley Cup Finals. Krasinski versus Fischer. Halpert versus Beasley. Who will win? We'll see tonight. Enjoy the action. Don't forget that once the Stanley Cup is given out to the captain of the Blues or the Bruins, we go right into rumor mode. Draft, free agency, RFAs, offer sheets, trades, everything covered right here on the Hockey Talk Show. So make sure you hit the thumbs up on Facebook and YouTube. Make sure you guys are rating and reviewing us in the Apple Podcast store there. 5 stars all the way. Spread the news. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Screen cap this bad boy. Throw that up on your Instagram right now. When you're in the locker room in your beer league, let everybody know. HockeyTalkShow.com. We talk hockey here all the time, and you guys get to have your say on the day's news, on the rumors, on the speculation, on the trades, on things that have happened and will happen. We only grow because of you guys. And again, if you watch the video form of this show today on YouTube or Facebook, thanks so much. If you have 4 minutes, go and download the podcast, whether it's on TuneIn, iTunes, Google Podcast, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever it is, and just listen to the ads up front. That's how we make our money right now on the Hockey Talk Show. So that is definitely appreciated. I don't care if you really listen to it. I don't care if you turn the volume all the way down. I don't care. As long as you're hitting the play button and you're on there for a good 5 minutes, you're A-OK with me. Enjoy Game 6, everybody. We'll see you real soon right here on the Hockey Talk Show.